Now, earlier this month, a 10-year-old boy in Doncaster reportedly killed himself after telling his mum he wanted to be a girl. His mum told an inquest she'd bought him girls' underwear to wear in private, but had refused his request to be allowed to wear makeup. Gender identity disorder, or gender dysphoria, describes a condition in which people feel trapped in the wrong body and gender. The onset of adolescence increases the difficulties for people who are gender dysphoric, but new research shows that children in the UK are being denied hormonal drugs that can delay puberty, allowing them more time to come to terms with their feelings. Medical opinion is divided whether such treatment is appropriate. So how should doctors treat children trapped in gender limbo? We'll be discussing that in a moment. But first, I'm joined by Lee Gale, who was diagnosed with gender dysphoria in his early 20s. Lee, can you tell me, you know, when you first became aware of these feelings? Were you a very young child?
I think I always had these feelings, and it's more in retrospect, looking back in hindsight, that I recognised what the feelings were. I was quite naive as a child, so I never understood. I remember watching a programme before sort of 10 years old, before puberty hit definitely, with my parents about hermaphrodites and intersex, and hoping that this was going to be something, a way of telling me something.
You felt
I wasn't
your parents
go through
watching you, so they were aware that you were in difficulty.
Yeah, so I think there were signs definitely when I was younger, but it was never anything I recognised. And my parents let me live sort of a genderless childhood in many ways, so I didn't really recognise that I should have fitted into a particular role.
When you say a genderless childhood, what do you mean, lady?
I was never sort of expected to play with a certain toy or do certain activities being a girl. My parents fought for me to play football at junior school, you know, and they were constantly writing letters in and asking for me to do football in PE. So I was never, you know, and I played with the boys at school and things like that. So I was never felt that I was pushed into being something that I wasn't as a child.
So in those early days, obviously, you know, you seem to be coping reasonably well. But what about when you hit puberty? That must have been a very difficult time.
Yeah, I went through fits and starts, stages of really never wanting to go through it, absolutely dreading that it was going to happen. And then going from that to wanting to fit in with the rest of my peers and get bigger breasts than any of them, start my periods as soon as possible. And it was kind of that unsure of why I felt like that and wondering whether that was something that girls went through anyway. But talking to people at school, I kind of realised that there was a difference because they were kind of looking forward to this womanhood.
So you were through puberty before you got any professional help?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was about 2021 when I went to my GP to talk about. I didn't know what was available, so I went and talked about getting some kind of reduction surgery on the chest.
So at that point, you know, it was too late for you to have these hormonal drugs that we're going to be talking about in a moment, which would have delayed puberty and maybe given you a bit more time and certainly made that transition a little less agonising. Would it have helped you, do you think, Lee? Would you have taken them?
Coming from my perspective, I'm not sure whether I would have known soon enough what was going on. I think if coming from nowadays, there's a lot more in the media about gender identity and that kind of thing. But as I was sort of growing up then, I had absolutely no idea that it even existed. And I had no idea until I went to a gender identity clinic in Sheffield that other people did this as well, and that you could get treatment, and you could get treatment on the NHS. I think it may have made things a lot easier and given me a lot more space to decide who I was and where I was going and what I needed. But on the other hand, doing it this way, I've come out knowing exactly who I am. I've done the whole journey kind of thing.
I mean, the thing about talking about giving young people space to decide, I mean, looking at the notes for this, it did seem that there is a professional opinion that given time, young people will change their mind, that actually, you know, if they're left and they don't do anything that's irreversible, they will either grow out of it or change their mind or decide their future is something else. I mean, from your own experience, is that a useful attitude to have?
I think talking to a lot of sort of, especially trans men, there are so many out there that knew when they were 4 or 5. And, you know, I've spoken to people that used to pack, so they used to put, you know, socks or something down their trousers, pretend they've got a penis. So coming from that perspective, there's so many people that have known from that age, and you know, they've gone and transitioned.
So what support would you like to see for young people now?
A lot more openness about it, and a more chance to talk to people about it, whether that's somebody professional or just being able to talk to a parent or a teacher or somebody, you know, a counsellor within a school, something like that, and not have to fear that if they said something they're going to be treated as freaks or going to be ignored.
But you're happy now?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, stay with us, Lee, because I'm joined now by Dr. Simona Giordano, who is an ethicist from the University of Manchester. She's in our Rome studio this morning. And Dr. Polly Carmichael, who's a consultant clinical psychologist with the Gender Identity Development Service at Tavistock and Portman NHS Trust, the only facility for the treatment of gender dysphoria in children and adolescents in the UK. Dr. Polly Carmichael, do we know how many children are diagnosed annually with this disorder, from what you see? I presume it's only the ones who actually seek help, but from ones that come into your clinic?
In terms of our service, I can say that over the last year, April to April, we had 45 referrals, new referrals. And this year, up until now, we've had 59. And this certainly is a pattern of an increasing number of referrals.
What age would they range from?
A wide range of ages. So as young as 5, and then our service sees individuals up to the age of 18.
Now, many young people experience a very difficult time during puberty because of how their bodies and their emotions are changing, Polly. How do parents and professionals distinguish, and children themselves, between GID and normal pubescent anxieties?
Well, I think for a diagnosis, if you like, of gender identity disorder, one's looking really for a constellation of things and thinking about not just adolescents but younger children as well. So the obvious ones are cross-dressing, a preference perhaps for toys and role play of the opposite sex of your child, peer relationships with the opposite sex that you might expect, mannerisms and voice, but also identity statements. And I think it was interesting listening to Lee Gale. It's not uncommon for individuals perhaps to find it difficult to formulate or articulate their feelings. And I think this is where it is really important to have open discussion so that one can explore with a young person what their feelings mean.
Let me bring in Dr. Simona Giordano. Dr. Giordano, we heard Lee talking about his experiences going back 20 years. Yeah. Why do you feel that young people in his situation are still not getting the support and help they should? What would you like to see happen in the way of actual treatment?
I would like to see happening in the UK what's happening in many other countries like Holland, Belgium, Germany, the US, where so-called blockers are given to the children at the onset of puberty or just after, when these children have a profound and persistent gender identity disorder, and they say that they need it and their family support their judgment. These hormones, these blockers, release the anxiety in growing in the wrong body and give them more time to explore their gender identity disorder or their real gender identity. They can be encouraged to have a real life experience. And very importantly, this will prevent future mutilating surgery. These
When you say it will prevent further surgery, you're saying that once a child is through puberty and their bodies have developed, then if they wish to continue, then they'll face surgery.
Well, of course, if they want to transition, they will have to reverse through surgery the secondary sex characteristics that have developed through normal development. If the blockers instead are used, puberty is suspended and therefore surgery will be much, much less invasive.
How safe are these hormonal blockers to give to young children? Do we know?
Current research shows that these drugs have got minimal side effects, that the outcome for children who are treated at the onset or just after puberty is much better. They are entirely reversible and they're highly beneficial. And from the point of view of ethics, the important thing is that they can save lives, given the high rate of attempt suicide among youth with gender identity disorder.
Dr. Polly Carmichael, it appears that specialists in this country are reluctant to prescribe these drugs, which would delay puberty, unlike countries, as Simone has just mentioned, such as Holland and the USA. We've heard from one mother who wasn't allowed to give her child these hormones. In Holland, her child fulfilled all the criteria for treatment and would have got the hormone blockers if they had been Dutch nationals, but she's still been refused the treatment here. I mean, what are parents meant to do in that situation?
In fact, we do offer that treatment. We work closely with paediatric endocrinologists and have a regular clinic together with them.
So of those 40 or so children that you see a year, can I just ask Polly this question, please, Simona? How many of those will actually be on the hormone blockers?
To be honest, I can't give you an exact figure for that. I think the issue really, though, is around the age at which the blocker is offered. And it's certainly true that in the UK at the current time, the age of offering the blocker is later.
Age would that be?
It depends on the stage of puberty, so it's hard to give an age, but it's nearer 16.
16?
Yes.
A girl could be 6 years past puberty.
Exactly. That's the whole point of it. 1 year makes a huge difference for these children, whereas they are treated in other countries at what is called Tanner stage 2 or 3, just after the onset of puberty, and international guidelines recommend this. The BISPED, the British Society of Diabetes, published guidelines recommending that puberty should be completed before this treatment can be given.
Dr. Michael, I think those guidelines are being revised at the moment. I mean, but isn't it preferable for you to see a child, instead of going through puberty, delaying that so they're not facing much more invasive surgery later on, that they can have time to see how their lives develop?
Yeah, this is a very important debate, and certainly we're working with other professionals to look at the pros and cons of each option. I think it's important to note that Holland was the first centre to start offering treatment at an earlier stage, and certainly they're producing very interesting evidence around that. But there are nonetheless concerns about the potential long-term effects on physical aspects, which I'm not qualified really to talk about, but also on what might be the effects of actually preventing an individual having an experience of their own sex hormones, and whether indeed in some cases this might influence the outcome. So I think, you know, it's a complex area, and it's certainly something that, you know, is being discussed and looked at.
Dr. Giordano, you have evidence of parents being forced to get hormones either, you know, regulated from abroad at great expense, one mother we spoke to, or just going on the internet.
Yes, this has been reported by a number of parents and by a number of clinicians outside. You mentioned rightly that in Holland they cannot accept children from the UK, but so the ones who can afford it travel to the US. But the point is that, you know, I wanted to respond to Polly. She said suspension of puberty could increase confusion, you know, could create false positives. So the child, if we let the child grow, maybe they make up their mind independently of drugs. But the reality is that there is evidence scientifically reported in journals that suspension of puberty improves the precision of the diagnosis, because it releases the anxiety of the child, and therefore the child has got more space to decide about their gender identity disorder. So it reduces the incidence of false positives. It doesn't increase it.
I just want to put one last very brief point to Lee, because he's still here. Do you think children should have more control about the way that they're treated? Are they able to make those decisions, do you think, at that early age?
Definitely. I think that there's a lot of evidence, especially talking to people within the community, that they know how they feel, and there is the possibility that they could grow out of it, but that the hormone blockers gives them that opportunity to explore that, and if they do grow out of it, then they can carry on.
Well, Lee Gale and Dr. Simona Giordana and Polly Carmichael, thank you very much. And if you'd like more information about what we've been discussing, you can call the Radio 4 Action Line. It's free on 0800 044 044, and this item will be our podcast for today, available from the website later.